Welcome back to Legal News and Review, coming to you recorded from Extreme Action Park and brought to you by Alpine Jaguar in Fort Lauderdale. If you want to contact the legal panel attorneys, Charles Moorhead's number is 954-572-7200, and Gary Singer can be reached at 954-851-1448. Once again, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
Legal News and Review is back on the air, and a special happy Thanksgiving to all the listeners. You know, construction, remodeling, from condos to commercial properties, and capital investments are double-digit growth, but it is fast-paced, and sometimes contractors make mistakes. And there's a practice called construction law.
Wait, Phil, I'm sorry. The contractor has to show up in order to...
Are you talking about real life?
Never mind.
Okay. But, you know, you need to go to an attorney that understands construction law. There's a new amendment, matter of fact, that became effective October 1st. This was signed into law, I guess it was back in June of this year, by Rick Scott. And now, and as a matter of fact, it was June 16th of this year, Governor Rick Scott signed this into law. It was a House Bill 87, and it's amendments to Chapter 558. I spoke to an attorney that does family law, does criminal law, meaning DUI, and real estate law, does closings. And I said to him, I said, you do construction law? Oh, yeah. I said, well, what do you know about Chapter 558? He goes, I'm not sure. Now, you ask Kim Gessner on it what it is. She'll tell you. She'll recite vice to verse and back and forth and what it was, and now it's got teeth in there. And let me first say good evening, Kim.
Good evening, Philip. Thank you for having me.
Kim, this amendment to Chapter 558, and I'm so glad to have a board-certified attorney, a specialist on, to talk about these issues. What is this? I mean, you said this adds teeth to an old amendment.
Well, I don't want to get too excited. It doesn't really add too many teeth, but it definitely adds something that was not there before. 558 has been around. It's a relatively new statute. It's been around since about 2003, and the intent behind it was to encourage pre-litigation dispute resolution, mm-hmm. which is wonderful because, you know, for at least for a homeowner or a construction developer, in that it requires the parties to serve certain notices of defects prior to filing suit. And this is a requirement before they can actually commence litigation. 558 has gone through a few changes in the mm-hmm. past 12 years that it's been around. And it seems to be evolving to play a more effective role in our lives as construction lawyers
right.
and in the construction world. But it never really has been something that made that much of a difference because there was really no teeth behind it. All it would do initially is just kind of abate a suit for 60 days. You'd have to serve a letter saying, here's the problem to the general contractor. Here are the areas of concern. And that general contractor would have a certain period of time to review those defects and respond. And only then, if the homeowner wasn't satisfied, they could initiate litigation. But if the contractor failed to respond or failed to review those defects, there really was no recourse. So 558 really didn't do much. As it's evolved, this amendment doesn't necessarily change too much. However, it starts to broaden that dispute resolution, and it requires more adequate documentation of those defects to be served with the notice.
I see. So it helps gear towards to hopefully stay out of litigation.
Right.
So can the homeowner still prepare this themselves, or does the homeowner need an attorney to prepare this required notice?
The homeowner should use an attorney. Now, when we look at the changes, the amendments that are effective, it is quite a detailed list, and there are documentation that has to be provided that supports those defects, you know, giving the location, the actual problem, and really making it worthwhile for the contractor to come back in and take a look at exactly what those defects are and to not have to spend time looking for them or trying to figure out what they are.
So has this specificity become a condition precedent to the filing of the lawsuit? How was that for lawyer talk?
That's pretty good.
So what happens if the homeowner messes it up? Can they now not – does that give the contractor a defense to the lawsuit just because the homeowner messed up the notice?
Well, that's the problem. It might give them a defense, and the only defense at this point it would probably be to – hey, they didn't comply with 558, court says, all right, fine, I'm going to issue an order staying the litigation until they do comply with 558.
Is it just a stay, or is that example, in foreclosure cases, if they don't do the required pre-suit 30-day notice, they can have the whole case thrown out because it's a condition precedent.
558's not carrying those teeth with it yet.
Okay. So it's kind of like a pre-suit mediation clause in a contract?
Exactly.
I mean, wouldn't you handle it in the same way by having your lawyer send a letter to the contractor and lay it out in that informal way before you'd have to go through this process?
A simple demand letter kind of seems like what you're talking about, but this is a statutory form. So you would refer to the statute. You would follow the guidelines of the statute. You would follow the deadlines of the statute. So it's a more formal process.
So is this a pro-contractor change or a pro-homeowner change?
I think it's both.
Or property owner, not just for homes.
And to be honest with you, I mean, as a litigator, we make our money litigating. So, maybe we're the ones that are losing out in the end.
On that note, and matter of fact, I'm taking a real life from one of Gary's newspapers, which is the Sun Sentinel, out of the 400 media outlets, is that contractors will use relatives, friends, licenses. And some big projects, get screwed up that way. I mean, there's one where they didn't add the right aggregate for the cement. It's like soup. And here they already put down the homeowner association over $50,000, and that's criminal, correct? I mean, that you would contact the state's attorney, say this guy, is not a licensed contractor, took this money, and then.
In my practice, I've never filed a formal criminal complaint. I've definitely dealt with areas of the law that, 713.31 deals with fraudulent liens that carry criminal implications. Chapter 489, the licensing statute you're referring to, can deal with some of those implications. That's not something that, I guess that option is there, but we would look at it more from the civil side. Obviously, operating under somebody else's license, another contractor's license, there's a whole gamut of issues, and I never recommend that a client use somebody else's license or loan, allow someone else to use theirs.
But it does, unfortunately, it's
pretty
happen.
Common.
Yeah.
Phil, you raise such a great question, almost accidentally in that, is it criminal? No, in a good way. Because that's,
all right, because I got a judge here. He'll slap you in jail so
fast. As a lay person, everyone thinks, okay, they did something wrong.
Yeah.
It's criminal. But, judge, how many cases do you get, and I'm not being facetious, about soupy cement or about some contractor that did something that may technically be criminal, but...
We do get cases where someone holds himself out as licensed, and they really aren't licensed. A lot of that occurred after the hurricane when we had home improvements, and we had a lot of contractors saying they're going to put in shutters and things of that sort, and they just didn't comply. And there were prosecutions, but it's fairly unusual. But there are, and I guess they try to deal with it in the civil realm. You also have fraud that you can bring forth. What I hear you saying, though, the impression I get, though, is that are we, with this statute, pretty much delaying the inevitable? I mean, to what extent is this going to promote resolution or settlement that wouldn't have happened anyway on its own? And you're basically putting the litigation would have started. When you get to this point, it's going to be litigation. It's not going to be in that type of settlement mode. What are your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. It is a form of delaying the inevitable, but the intent behind it is to try to bring the parties together. And the change that we have seen, at least in South Florida, since the recession and since now the construction is now coming back, is that people are a lot more reluctant to spend money litigating over construction claims now. So I think people are looking towards more, what are my alternative dispute resolution options? 558 is just something that the legislature has presented that is, a statute obligating them to do that. But there was a case that came out earlier this year by the Southern District, which is, it's just an interesting food for thought. The case name is Altman Contractors, Inc. versus Crum and Forster Specialty Insurance Company. It's in the Southern District of Florida.
It's a federal case.
Yes. And basically it was a condominium association served Altman Contractors, the GC, with a 558 notice of claim. At that point, the GC went to their insurance carrier, which is where a lot of these construction claims are now going, because and they want their carriers to pick them up, which that's a whole other interesting myriad of issues that it raises. But he went to their insurance carrier and demanded a defense and an indemnification. And ultimately what the court said was, under the policy, the 558 claim did not trigger the indemnification and the defense because it wasn't a suit, and that's what was defined, or it wasn't a civil suit.
Was this a declaratory judgment action?
No, there was a...
How did it wind up in federal court, just as an aside?
Well, Altman basically sued their insurer and said, you know, you owe us a duty to, or you need to indemnify us for the costs incurred in this process. And while the court said that, no, the insurance carrier is not on the hook, in its opinion, it talked about why insurance carriers may want to revisit redefining what they consider a suit in their policies to encourage insurance carriers to take, to partake in the 558 processes, because it allows them to either preserve evidence or narrow issues if it does go into litigation, and therefore it does even compress that litigation into something more manageable. So at least we're seeing a trend towards trying to resolve these issues earlier on rather than full-blown litigation.
Kim, let me ask you a question for our lay people, non-attorneys who are listening. When would someone, instead of coming to a real estate lawyer like myself, go over to your firm, Buchanan, Ingersoll & Rooney, to engage a construction lawyer?
Well, Gary, not to steal any business from you.
Fair. I think our firms are a little bit different.
But they don't need to stop with you first. Yeah. They can start with us. Well, real estate, you know, the real estate litigation, you know, it's, I believe that deals with a whole different myriad of issues. You know, ours would be, you know, normally I'm called into it when, either, you know, pre-project, when contracts are being entered into for the development. And we do work with, we have an entire, you know, real estate team that we work with. And that's one of the great things of Buchanan is we kind of do provide the A to Z services because we are large. So, you know, down the hall from me, I've got a real estate team. You know, upstairs, I've got an estate team. You know, on the other coast, we have, on a, over in Tampa, we have land use and all that stuff. But, you know, construction is really when the dirt starts moving around.
You're dealing with, like, developments, developers, larger projects?
General contractors, yes. And we really shy away from, you know, real estate development, or, I'm sorry, residential development. So really, we deal with a lot of subcontractors, material men, suppliers, general contractors, and developers and owners.
So who would your ideal, I mean, I understand your firm does great, and your firm's fantastic, actually. Yeah. Great
Thank
reputation.
You. They
I
are.
Have a lot of respect for them. But, you know, but speaking specifically about your practice, what would be your ideal client?
General contractors. I represent a lot of general contractors and a lot of developers.
Okay.
And the occasional, my earlier practice, the first several years of my practice, I worked for a smaller boutique firm that represented a lot of subcontractors and material suppliers, guys that were kind of, you know, lower down on that list. But, you know, those are the guys that kind of don't get paid first sometimes. You know, they're the ones that kind of have to fight. So I've done it all, but at this point we do a lot of general contractor.
Now you're board certified, and your practice focuses primarily in resolving legal disputes through pre-suit negotiations.
Sure.
When you do a pre-suit negotiation, how do you know that you just are wasting your time?
Unrealistic demands. I mean, you use your gut. You know, when I, you know, it's interesting you bring this up. Just yesterday, as I was leaving the office, I have a general contractor client that recently we leaned a property that he wasn't being paid on. We hadn't heard anything in response to that until yesterday, and I received the call from the other attorney, and I could tell by the way he said, look, I've drafted a letter, I mailed it, clearly you haven't gotten it yet, I'll send it to you, but here's why your client isn't owed any money. And the way he was speaking, I knew that we're probably not going to spend a lot of time negotiating pre-suit, because He was not taking a reasonable stance. I try to say, all right, where's the issue? Is it in the masonry work? Is it, were the plans, you know, do the architecturals not match the structurals? Mm-hmm. Like, where is the defect? Whose fault is it? Let's, you know, show me what you've got. I'll show you what I've got, and let's see what's reasonable. You can tell when somebody comes to the table and they're just going to try to strong arm you.
Now, construction law certification, what actually does that mean?
That means that I'm considered by the Florida Bar to be an expert in construction litigation. And I want to say like 24 areas of board certification mm-hmm. in the state of Florida. And basically it means that a certain percentage of my practice has been nearly 40% of my practice has been designated towards just construction litigation. And you know, obviously taking a certain amount of CLEs that fall within that and then the inevitable construction law certification test that we all get to.
Well, you know, your reputation does precede you. I was expecting a much older woman. And matter of fact, congratulations. You just had a baby this past May.
Yeah. I did.
And
Boy.
Boy.
Very nice. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes.
But you're also a construction law committee member for the education. Correct?
Yes. The Florida Bar has a number of standing committees, one of them being the Construction Law Certification Committee. I'm privileged enough to sit on that. It's a 3-year term. I'm in my third year right now. I want to say around maybe 11 members, high profile, great construction lawyers from around the state. Mm-hmm. And we work on drafting the test and administering the test and grading the test and dealing with all of that in between. It's a wonderful experience, and I certainly sit around the table with a lot of very accomplished people.
You certainly do, and especially at Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney. I've spoken to several attorneys there. All of them, by the way, it's like you could swing a cat and hit a board-certified attorney in your firm. Seriously, they're all very dedicated professionals, very passionate about what they do, and will take the time to help educate me on a topic that I want to produce regarding the law. Your resources are phenomenal. And then in my research to find out, you didn't tell me, nobody else told me, but from the U.S. News and World Report, your firm is ranked one of the best law firms in the country from 2014-2015. That's huge.
That's correct. Buchanan, I can't say enough great things about it. We really do have wonderful people. Our culture is unmatched. Our firm really invests in their lawyers. They're mm-hmm. willing to stand behind them. They're willing to, whatever we need to grow and flourish. They stand behind you and say, what can we do?
And they support the pro bono work and the community outreach,
yes.
which is very good.
We have a lot of events that we're involved with. We're very heavily involved in legal aid. In fact, my firm, Adele Stone, our managing partner of our office, organized what Legal Aid's Bridge to Justice Breakfast, which is once a year. It's become a huge event that basically goes towards supporting legal aid. She also does work with the Innocence Project.
Adele's an absolute powerhouse. She was everywhere.
She was she was a former chair of the Florida Bar Foundation.
Yes.
And her husband is the former president of the Florida Bar.
Yes,
Jesse Diner.
Jesse is my direct boss, and I'm very privileged to work on many cases with him, and he's an incredible mentor.
And a graduate of Gettysburg College.
Yes, he is.
I forgot to mention, she's also a shark. She's a Nova shark.
Right? Yeah. We got a gator sitting behind us, so be careful.
You got a couple of sharks at the table.
Construction law, and construction law, whether it's commercial or a larger project from an association condo and so forth, what is the best way to get in touch with you?
Best way to get in touch with me is either my direct line, which is 954-335-1590, or via email, which is Kimberly.Gessner, G-E-S-S-N-E-R, at BIPC.com, like Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney.com.
And yesterday, while I was doing some research, I just typed in your name and added construction law, came right up.
Oh, really?
Your landing page within the big firm, and you guys have about 500, 600 attorneys, right?
Yeah, I think we're over 550 now. We're growing all the time. Yeah.
Kim, I want you to hang out because we're going to be doing this week's Legal News in Review as presented by Charles Moorhead, who that's pre-recorded, and Gary Singer. And we also have Steve Versner here, along with the Honorable Judge Jeff Levinson. We're going to be coming right back with this week's Legal News in Review. Hang out and, of course, comment if you have a comment on this.